is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our staff across the country are reporting increasing number of deceased livestock, malnourished children, and drought-related deaths. There are also reports of people searching for aid.
There was Mohamed Abdi, country director of the Norwegian Refugee Council in Somalia, on the growing drought. Details coming up. Also, criminal gangs killed dozens in separate attacks in northwest and central Nigeria. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A new assessment by the World Food Program finds a record 9 million people across three conflict-affected regions in northern Ethiopia are suffering from acute hunger. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
A United Nations survey conducted in Tigray before the conflict erupted in November 2020 found 93% of the population had enough to eat. Now, some 15 months into the war, the UN reports 83% of the population is short of food, with nearly 40% gripped by severe hunger. The World Food Program reports 13% of Tigrayan children under age 5 and half of all pregnant and breastfeeding women are malnourished. WFP spokesman Thompson Theory says lack of proper nourishment is leading to low birth weight, stunting, and maternal deaths. He says people who cannot feed themselves are resorting to extreme coping measures to survive.
Diets are increasingly impoverished as food items become unavailable and families rely almost exclusively on cereals while limiting portion sizes and the number of meals they eat each day to make whatever food is available stretch further.
As the war in Tigray has spread across northern Ethiopia, hunger also has spread widely to neighboring Amhara and Afar regions. Theory says fighting and conflict-driven displacement is pushing hunger and malnutrition rates up to dangerous levels in those regions.
Now, WFP estimates that on average, crisis-affected families in northern Ethiopia were getting less than 30% of their caloric needs in the past months, pushing people deeper into crisis. It's expected that that constant humanitarian food assistance will be required at least throughout 2022.
Despite the many challenges, the WFP reports it has managed to deliver food aid to nearly 4 million people across northern Ethiopia since March. However, it says intense fighting in the region has prevented food convoys from reaching Tigray since mid-December. The WFP is appealing to the warring parties to agree to a humanitarian pause so agencies can safely transport life-saving food, medicine, and other essential relief through the front lines. It says the lives, the health, and well-being of millions of civilians depend on it. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In response to last week's military coup, the African Union has suspended Burkina Faso's membership until constitutional order is restored. ECOWAS, the West African Regional Bloc, has already suspended Burkina Faso but stopped short of imposing sanctions. According to a Reuters report, an ECOWAS delegation, along with a United Nations envoy, are due to visit Burkina Faso today to meet with the coup leaders before deciding on the next steps. On January 25th, rebel soldiers detained President Roch Kabore amid rising public anger at his failure to stem jihadist violence in the impoverished nation. Meanwhile, according to the French news agency AFP, the long-awaited trial in Burkina Faso over the 1987 assassination of revolutionary leader Thomas Sankara is being suspended until the restoration of the constitution. The trial of Sankara's alleged killers was to resume at a military court in the capital Ouagadougou today. The Biden administration is considering denying $130 million of military aid allocated for Egypt over the country's failure to comply with human rights conditions laid out by the State Department. A senior State Department official said there is complete consensus with the department on the recommendations that Secretary of State Antony Blinken to allocate the money to other countries. But the State Department can still use an often criticized national security waiver to bypass the human rights stipulations attached to the aid. Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi how the U.S. is striking a balance between its values and its national interests.
As you know, human rights is an aspect in international relations used or abused according to national interests. Egypt is a very important strategic interest for the U.S. because of many reasons. The Suez Canal, regional issues in which Egypt is involved, like Libya, Sudan, Gaza, East Med, Gaz. Therefore, there can be a mix of human rights rhetoric with little human rights pressures, but not enough to satisfy human rights activists and organizations. Remember, the current tension between the U.S. and Russia over Ukraine and the threats to gas supplies from Siberia to Europe means keeping a strong relationship with Egypt, whose gas export to Europe in the last year had been escalating, are very much important and urgent than any other human rights issue.
While the move looks punitive and symbolic, human rights activists argue that those millions withheld are so tiny compared to the $2.5 billion sale of U.S. weapons and equipment to Egypt authorized just this week by the Biden administration. How do you explain the two contradicting approaches by the Biden administration?
The U.S. needs to strike a balance between human rights activists and real politique. The rhetoric of Biden during the election and national interests. So the U.S. does play a little financial punishment here and there, but real business is achieved somewhere else. Relations between the two countries are not hostage to a particular aspect in the bilateral relations, which is human rights.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price said, "Our relationship with Egypt is multifaceted and Egypt is a valuable partner across many fronts. The United States remains committed to engaging with Egypt on human rights issues." Would that mean the State Department can use an often criticized national security waiver to bypass the human rights stipulations attached to the aid as it has done in the past?
Very possible, especially if the tensions in Ukraine rises further. The U.S. then would be interested in winning allies, not alienating them. A waiver is very possible under such circumstances to make sure that Europe is not suffering from any Russian gas blockage. As you know, there is always electoral rhetoric. So what Biden said during the election against Trump about not giving a blank check for Trump's favorite dictator is not what is happening in real politics. Now, Biden is in power. He sees an international situation developing in Europe, the biggest crisis in international relations after the end of the Cold War. So it is very possible if the tensions in Ukraine rises further, the U.S. then would be interested in winning and keeping the allies, not alienating them, including Egypt. However, is very possible under such circumstances.
That was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. Kenyan police say one suspect has been arrested after an improvised explosive device killed at least 13 passengers and injured others in a bus traveling in northeast Kenya near the border with Somalia. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan police in northeast Mandera County say the 14-seat bus was heading to Mandera town early Monday when it drove over a roadside bomb. Kenyan media reports cited witnesses saying they heard gunfire after the deadly explosion. The National Media Group quoted the region's police chief, Bunei Rono, saying one suspect was arrested in connection with the bombing and was being questioned. While no group immediately claimed responsibility for the attack, suspicion will fall on the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The Somali terror group has in the past launched several cross-border attacks on security forces and public transportation. The Al-Qaeda link group is blamed for most of the northeast and coastal region's attacks, though analysts say some of the violence is due to local and political disputes. Al-Shabaab in 2015 attacked a convoy on the same road as Monday's attack that was carrying Mandera Governor Ali Roba, killing three people, including two police officers. Kenyan police say suspected Al-Shabaab fighter on Wednesday sprayed vehicle carrying judicial officials with bullets in nearby Lamu County, injuring several people. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Aid agencies operating in Somalia are issuing warnings about escalating drought, which has caused a humanitarian crisis in the Horn of Africa country. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The Norwegian Refugee Council says Somalia's escalating drought has led to a massive displacement crisis. Some 245,000 people have already fled their homes, with numbers projected to reach up to nearly 1.5 million as conditions worsen. Mohamed Habdi is the country director for NRC in Somalia.
Our staff across the country are reporting increasing number of deceased livestock, malnourished children, and drought-related deaths. There are also reports of people searching for aid. Women and children in particular, and elderly, are hardest hit by this drought.
Some say the widespread drought has forced 250,000 people to flee their homes. The lack of rain is also putting communities at risk, with life-threatening water and food shortages and crop and livestock losses. It's also spurring gender-based violence and conflicts over natural resources. The aid agency says relief efforts are underway, but available resources are insufficient to meet urgent needs. Abdi is appealing to the donor community to provide life-saving assistance.
For us to avert humanitarian disaster that is unfolding before our eyes, we are asking the donor countries to provide the much-needed funding that is necessary to save millions of people that have been affected by one of the worst droughts in the last decade.
At present, over 3 million people in Somalia, one-fifth of the population, are impacted by drought. The International Organization for Migration estimates that nearly 1.5 million people may be displaced in the coming 6 months. Abdi says his organization aims to provide assistance to 500,000 of the most affected, the majority of them being women, children, and the elderly. Among the relief supplies needed include drinking water, food, basic income, and support for livelihoods.
This will help avoid further displacement. We also need to help people before they begin to move, especially for the people that are currently in hard-to-access areas. This means access is critical and supporting them at home before they move to urban areas in search of assistance.
Most parts of Somalia have already been battered by decades of civil war and deadly attacks from Islamist insurgents linked to Al-Qaeda. Now the country is experiencing severe drought, with Jubaland and central regions and adjacent areas being the most affected. A new report by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization indicates that the situation has only worsened in recent weeks. The agency has so far not forecast an end to the weather emergency. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Heavily armed criminal gangs have killed dozens of people in separate attacks in northwest and central Nigeria. The weekend attacks, according to the French news agency AFP, came shortly after President Muhammadu Buhari called on the army to crack down on gangs known locally as bandits, who were recently designated as terrorists by the government. Niger State Governor Sani Bello said more than 100 motorcycle-riding gunmen stormed into the Shiroro district in broad daylight Saturday, killing 11 security task force members and several villagers and injuring many others. In a separate attack on Sunday, according to the state internal security commissioner, bandits rode into the Kormin Masara village, killing 11 residents and burning more than 30 houses. President Muhammadu Buhari has been under intense pressure to end bandit violence before he leaves office next year at the end of his 2 terms in office. So far, measures including military operations, air raids, and amnesty deals have failed to end the violence. The government of Zamfara State in northwestern Nigeria has reopened schools that were shut 5 months ago. Incessant attacks and the mass abduction of students and staff led to their closure. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
The state's Commissioner of Information, Ibrahim Dusara, explained to VOA why all of Zamfara's primary and secondary schools were shut.
First of all, the schools were closed down due to the abduction of some students in 2 institutions in the state. First of all, the abduction of students in Gaman Girls Science Secondary School, Jengebe, in Talata Mafara local government. 2, the abduction of students in JSS, a government day secondary school, Kaya, in Maradin local government. Those threatening abductions were the reasons why the state government decided to close the schools so as to protect the lives of the children.
Dosara says the government worked with security agencies to reopen the schools following the report of a committee on how to handle threats once classes resumed. The commissioner says 115 of Zamfara's 200 schools were reopened, while the rest have remained closed because of the security situation.
The schools were categorized, like I said, into category A, which is green, without dangers, places that students can conduct their learning process without any security threat. And group A, which is yellow group, which is a little bit dangerous, but with cautions and extra careful, students can resume and continue their education. And we categorize another group, which is C, that we call red zone, which is considered as no-go area for students, as security is an issue there.
Dosara also says security in Zamfara State is improving.
We have a large deployment of troops into the state by the federal government, and the troops are working hard, taking the fight to the enclaves of the bandits, and they are successful, as many bandits are being neutralized. So people are very happy, and some of them are even jubilating because of the current efforts by the military.
Dosara mentions another measure that should also improve students' education: the government's recruitment of 100 new teachers to schools throughout the state. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos, Nigeria.
Rwanda has reopened the border crossing into Uganda at Gatuna. The decision was finalized at a meeting of Rwandan President Paul Kagame with a son, an advisor of Uganda's president, Yoweri Museveni. Eugene Uwimana has the story from Gatuna border.
After 3 years, the Gatuna border is now open. Although the road to Uganda on Monday was still empty, Rwandan shop owners are getting ready to serve customers crossing the border. Sentamu Aaron has a shop at the border. He says they are very happy to see the border reopened. He added they are going to trade again. Also says he expects to see their lives develop because Uganda is their market and Rwanda is Uganda's market, especially we Rwandans who are landlocked. Waswandungwe Fabrison is a Ugandan truck driver. He says it's been 3 years since he crossed the border and he's very happy that he can now. He goes on to say he'll call his friends and tell them that the business is going to thrive again. Rwanda relies on the Gatuna crossing as a transport corridor that runs from the Indian Ocean port to Mombasa through Kenya and Uganda. The same road also funnels goods through Rwanda to Burundi and the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The Rwandan government urges travelers to not get excited and forget that the two countries and the whole world are still grappling with COVID-19. Dr. Edson Gwagasore is a division manager at Rwanda Biomedical Center.
Opening of the borders, we maintain prevention measures. And among them, we keep on testing where we request everyone to be tested, especially truck drivers. And also, we also follow up patients, especially cases that have been identified as positive. So these measures, we keep on stepping up. As long as we see still there's a need, since we're also observing different variants of concerns in different countries, so there's a need really to keep on stepping up on these measures.
Reopening the Gatuna border is one of the moves that Rwanda and Uganda agreed to make as they mend the relationship that has been frosty for more than a decade ago. The Rwandan government closed its borders to Uganda in March 2019, alleging Kampala supported terrorist groups that wanted to destabilize Rwanda. Uganda also accused Rwanda of spying. The two countries deny the allegations. There was movement on mending relations after a recent meeting of Rwandan President Paul Kagame and Ugandan presidential advisor Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, the son of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. Also, Uganda's head of military intelligence, Major General Abel Kandiho, has been removed from his position and posted to South Sudan, another action Rwanda had sought. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Gatuna border.
The African Cup of Nations matches will return to the newly built Olembe Stadium in Yaoundé for the semi-final match on Thursday between Cameroon and Egypt, as well as Sunday for the finals. Eight people died at a stampede there last Monday. According to a Reuters report, Cameroon Sports Minister Narcisse Moulay-Kombi said the disaster happened because one of the stadium gates was shut when it should have been open and because there was a lack of security and the selling of counterfeit tickets. In the quarterfinal matches yesterday, Senegal beat giant killer Equatorial Guinea 3-1, while Mohamed Salah scored an equalizer as Egypt came from behind to eliminate Morocco 2-1. In Saturday's quarterfinal matches, Burkina Faso beat Tunisia 1-0 and Cameroon defeated Gambia 2-0. On Wednesday for the semifinals, Burkina Faso faces Senegal, while Cameroon will battle Egypt on Thursday. You can get more of the AFCON coverage from the Sunny Side of Sports. Listen at voanews.com or find the show wherever you get your podcasts. Also, keep track of the latest on Sunny's Twitter feed at VOA Sunny Sports or Facebook at VOA Sunny. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baru, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturday.